Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
This episode of Whiskey Riffraff is brought to you by Templeton Whiskey. Originally distilled in the Prohibition era, Templeton Whiskey has always been rooted in the notion that every bottle is an opportunity to share their small-town strong spirit with the world. From their flagship variety of rye whiskey to the top-shelf specialties, there's something for everyone to enjoy, whether sipping it neat while relaxing on the porch or mixing it in your favorite cocktail for a party. Templeton Whiskey isn't just a liquor brand for when you need a strong drink. It's a way of life.
We got Isaac from 49 Winchester, presented by Templeton Distillery, Templeton Rye. Having a nice little drink here. We do have a lot of questions from the fans and some things to go over with you guys. I wanted to start with something interesting because of kind of from our standpoint, social media, and we pride ourselves having a finger on the pulse and kind of seeing what everybody's talking about. So we pose a lot of questions to kind of gauge that. Your band's name, I mean, Wes, I would say it's one of the top. When you talk about who's the next big thing, who would you like? Who's your like number one draft pick right now? Who's like 49 Winchester always comes up now. You guys have been on the Late Show now, and you feel it, or are you guys so focused, tunnel vision, that you kind of don't hear the, I don't want to call it noise, but the fandom really kind of growing?
I mean, we can see things. We see the same things you guys see. You know what I mean? We see a lot more people taking note now, and you know, we see a lot more people coming to shows, and we see a lot more CDs and vinyls being sold, and we see a lot more streams on the platform. So, I mean, we've kind of seen the writing on the wall for a little while now, but it's cool to finally see it kind of starting to come into fruition. You know what I mean? Like Seeing the physical examples of that progress is pretty cool.
Would you guys, real quick, what? Go ahead. Well, not that you're in for it for the money, of course, but my question now that I think about it, but kind of an interesting question, because that just comes with it. You guys like make more money, right? It just be like, oh, the streams are up, the concerts are bigger, more ticket sales, and you go, oh shit, like, wait a minute, like this is happening. So that's got to be great too for you guys. You guys grinded it out for so long, right? So yeah, props to you guys doing it the right way.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We take a lot of pride in that. We've done it kind of the same way from day one, and people have just started to really latch onto it in a bigger way now. So it's a cool thing to be a part of.
Would you call this the breakout year in a sense?
I don't know. 2023 is looking awfully good for us. I guess it depends on what you want to call the breakout. I mean, this year has been the year when we've been able to finally get, you know, a little more financially stable, a little broader touring base. We're able to cover a lot more bases now and travel around a lot more of the country than we used to when we were kids and we were first starting this thing out. So, yeah, man.
Did you get a big tour bus this year, or did you get that the year before?
No, that's coming next year. We're still trying to maximize our dollars as much as we can right now, especially with our bass player Chase just having a new baby, so we're keeping it chief until next spring.
Respect.
That's got to be a big. That's got to be a big one, though. Yeah, it's got to be a big, exciting moment to get that bus. Yeah,
I mean, it's just we're so used to the van, and you know, we've done it now for 9 years this way, and it'll be a great upgrade, I'm sure. We're looking super forward to it.
Yeah, you guys are gonna love that. You're gonna love that. you were on the road with, speaking of road, Whiskey Myers this year, playing some big shows. Shane Smith and the Saints were around as well. What is it like kind of learning from some road warriors like them too, who have, you know, really kind of, as an indie band, really taking it to the next level? I mean, they're having gold, platinum records and stuff that up until fairly recently was pretty unheard of for like indie type artists. So like, what has it been like kind of working alongside them?
It was great, man. It was great to get in the fold with those guys. They're super pros. It was good for us to see how touring is done on that level. Just from the logistics to the performance to everything top to bottom. It was really good to be around those guys for so long. It was cool to see a band that came from sort of similar circumstances, doing things on the level that we see ourselves doing them on in the future. You know, those guys have known each other forever. They started out with really, you know, humble beginnings, just a small seed, a bunch of buddies that wanted to rock and roll together. And that's what we are now. So, it was a great blueprint for us to look at and follow and admire all summer, man. Those guys are great top to bottom, from Cody to the guys that sell merch to the everybody. That's a great camp.
You're where you guys are from in Virginia, right? Where your band was formed, that part of the country, just insane, like the music coming out of it. It's almost like, when you really look at it, it's like, who else have we got? We got Charles Whiskey Gowden right now, and who's amazing. You guys, like a lot of like the young, but it's just like it never ends. You see the next guy and then the next guy, and then what is it about that part?
Just crushing it right now.
Yeah, what is it about Appalachia? Like, what is, do you have a theory on why? Is it kind of like the upbringing? Is it kind of just like the way of life? Is it kind of a combination of everything? But because the creative side of it seems pretty insane when you compare it to other parts of the country.
I think if you're going to narrow it down and kind of put a box around it and call it all country music, which I guess you kind of have to do, I think that there's no better place in the country to have been born and raised than right here, to experience that life and to know what these things are that you hear being sung about in so many country songs. I mean, this is about as country as it gets out here. It really is. It's a very rural area. It's very socially secluded. It's very geographically secluded. And I think it's led to a lot of young artists who have relied on their creativity and their minds to help them sort of overcome some of those disadvantages that Appalachia has. And it's presented some brilliant artists in the process. So it's a cool place to be a part of, to be from. It's a cool scene to be a part of, to be growing within that ranks. And I think it's cool that people are just sort of, it's like the whole world just all of a sudden sort of turned on to Appalachian artists when Tyler and Sturgill and exactly. Stapleton, even for that matter, started doing it. So those guys are really the ones that paved the way for hillbillies to get up and play this weird, ungenrifiable rock and country music. So,
go ahead, Wes.
I was going to say, that's a really cool point, because I feel like there's such an eclectic mix of people that come from kind of the Appalachia region playing. Sometimes it's bluegrassy. Sometimes it's like, you know, honky tonk country-ish. You guys almost have like a bit of a soul rock funk flavor at times. Like, I mean, you guys yourself are very eclectic just in kind of the way you roll, but like you can't really pinpoint one thing and call that the like Appalachia sound. That's like not, that's right. You can't do that.
Sure. And it's because I think that the country music scene, the country music world that's evolving and developing in Appalachia is something that doesn't have to, from the jump, there's not been any boundaries or limitations set on it. It doesn't have to fit a formula. It doesn't have to be quantized lyrics about the same shit over and over, like you see in a lot of avenues of country music, unfortunately, today. So I think just having the creative freedom of being the different little brother has sort of been an advantage for Appalachian artists.
Right. And it's like the difference between a scene and an industry, in a sense. Sure. Like a scene doesn't necessarily have someone behind it pulling the strings, keeping the box tight.
Sure.
Just kind of my thought.
Well, I agree completely. We shared a Wes, I forgot how young he is. Super young. This kid, Logan Halstead from Appalachia. He's so good. And it's like, when I look at somebody that young and I go, what you guys have done and some of the names you mentioned, a kid who maybe is growing up in a really rough situation, they kind of have like a lot of hope now. They're like, oh shit, wait a minute. I actually like playing guitar. I like doing this. I could sing a little bit. Where maybe it used to be a pipe dream to some extent, but now it's like,
Yeah, man, it's a great thing for, I'm glad that the people in this part of the world are starting to realize it. Cause, and I think the internet has had a big part to do with that. People being able to broadcast your music instantly to people all over the planet, as opposed to having to move to Nashville, move to Austin, move to LA, move to New York City, move to wherever else that there's a music hub and try to conform and fit into that music hub. It's just a totally different approach that's being taken now. And I think it's resulted in a lot of great music because of that.
What are your thoughts on Nashville? You go there ever?
Yeah, I will be there soon. Yeah. We love Nashville. I mean, Nashville as a city is great. I think that there are some pros and cons to a lot of the business end of things in the city. But Nashville itself, man, there's nowhere that's got that concentration of great music and great musicians and like-minded people. So Nashville's always cool, man.
You have a song on the new album called Damn Darlin'. We had a fan question asking if that was based on a specific person, a specific woman or a specific situation, or is that just kind of,
that was kind of
a revelation of other stuff.
It's when I started writing that tune, I kind of made a conscious decision right at the beginning of it that it was going to be something a little bit further away from what I'm used to writing, which is really introspective, really kind of personalized first person point of view kind of songs. That's what I've always done best is those kind of songs. And this one was meant to be more of a kind of a storyline, kind of a third person, you know, look in from over the top at this thing that's happening. And it was really just a way to say, you know, heartbreaks and honky tonks are forever, you know? So even not, you know, I was like, people are like, is that about you? And I'm like, I was a year old in 1995, which is the first line of the song, the night before Christmas, 1995. This is just a few months, but it was just kind of a way to get outside of my own little, rut that I was in and write a song that was a little bit different and had a little different spin on it than what I had been.
And of course mentions the Exit Inn, which is a popular venue in Nashville.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. It's a great spot, man. That's one of those places in Nashville that still feels like it has a lot of soul. It's a legendary
spot. Was that one of the ones that was really damaged, Wes? Didn't we with the no, right?
The tornado.
The basement.
Yeah, basement east.
Yeah, okay.
Basement east got hit really super, super hard. But I don't think Exit Inn got a whole lot.
Exit Inn had like a whole ownership thing and who
they were.
I don't actually remember how that shook out because it was a couple of years ago, but
to piggyback off that, another
I think it's still being.
Yeah. Oh, is it still?
Yeah, I think it's still being they're shaking it out as we speak. I'm not sure I don't think what the future of the accident will be, but.
Well, it makes me feel better about not knowing. I'm like,
Same. Wes and I are both born in the Midwest. we did have one of the fan questions specifically ask about the song Michigan, being kind of curious about the story behind the song or kind of how it came about. If you don't mind kind of elaborating on that one.
That was another one that I was kind of trying to write in a way that was a little bit, not about me. So that experience is really, and I don't even know if I've ever spoken about this before, but that song kind of stemmed from some girlfriend troubles that one of my other band at the time that was about somebody that I didn't even know, but I knew the situation and I wrote the song to sort of fit around it.
Oh, nice.
Ex of a band member.
You're like the perfect guy to reach out to, like when a guy needs help texting like a girlfriend or a wife during some like chaos, like some argument.
For sure.
Like, I need a guy like Isaac to be like, hey, this is how I would frame it. And let me write a little chorus real quick.
You got a lot of experience in that kind of stuff.
You could get in the business of like people being like, hey, I want you to write this fuck you song and I will pay you money. And then here's her name. Here's his name. Like, it's just, can we drop this? And then And maybe it's a song. Maybe it works.
Like Wheeler Walker Jr.'s "Fuck You, Bitch." Like just right. Like yeah. Straight to the point country song.
Right on the nose. Yeah, for sure.
Oh man.
Do you find yourself drawing a lot of other influences from friends very often, or is it kind of more something where you're closer to the vest?
It's pretty limited. It's mostly pretty close to the vest kind of stuff. It's songwriting to me is always, I kind of got a weird, unique process where there really is no process. They just kind of strike me like a bolt of lightning out of nowhere and I write them down. And they've always seemed very personal to me, almost like, I don't know, man, your new song, the one you're working on at any given moment feels like a new baby. You know what I mean? It's this fresh new thing that you're bringing life to and tending and taking care of. So most of it is pretty personalized, and I don't really do a lot of co-writes. Don't really write a whole lot with other folks or, even amongst the band, generally I'll bring a finished song to the boys and let them flesh their parts out on it. So that's just always how it's been, man. And that's because that's how I learned to play and write. It was just stuck in my room with the door locked and in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, I have so much respect for that. Like I think as Wes and I got jaded by the industry and we kind of stopped caring about the PR labels and all that garbage, like you really start to appreciate artists that like do it. Like I'm not saying you're doing it by yourself, but the guy right there behind Wes, like Alan Jackson's like known for writing entire albums with no co-writers at times or you'll just see writer Alan Jackson. I'm like, I love that. Like, and it comes through in the music. He's probably my favorite. Like what got me into country music as a 90s kid, born in 88, but like when I heard Alan Jackson on the radio and then I started getting older, like it never went away. And I feel like the authenticity of that, but what you just said made me think about a recent Joe Rogan podcast with Rick Rubin. And they're talking about, I think it was Jay-Z and Eminem and the way, how different of the approaches they had to like, he's like, Eminem is always writing in like a notebook like this, just like constantly. And then he said, then Eminem said like 99% of this like never becomes anything. It's just a way to keep his brain moving into something with the song or a beat, where he's like Jay-Z, like he plays him a beat and he just sits there for 30 minutes and thinks of the entire song and then walks into the thing. And just like the song is like, boom.
Yeah.
You may have to redo it once, which is like insane to me when I hear that.
Sure.
All right.
But I mean, you're kind of doing this, like you said, I have an idea. I sit down, I write it. I'm like, that to me is like some of the most impressive things that like all of like anybody that has a career in anything. It's like the creative ability to just sit there. Are you a note guy? Do you like put ideas down and then like kind of like think on it? Or is it just like, boom, I have to like get something, something's clicking in my head.
It's like that. It's like, oh, it's clicking in my head. Need to get it out while it's here kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like strike while the iron's hot, because that freshness, I've found that most of the great songs I've written have not been ones that have stalled after the first verse or the first chorus, or songs that I had to really sit and put tons of thought into how I'm going to place things within rhyme schemes or how I'm going to do, you know, like the best ones that I've ever written have always been the ones that just go like that. And I usually just, it'll start with either a vocal line or a melody on the guitar, maybe a chorus or whatever it is. And I'll grab pen and paper and my little acoustic, and I'll usually write the whole tune before I even bring it to the boys. And then I think that our kind of unconventional approach, that's part of what's kept us sounding unique and fresh and new all the time, because it's kind of an unconventional way to approach things, to just bring guys finished songs and say literally play whatever you want over top of it. But that's what we do, man. That's what makes us who we are.
Do they get jacked then when you're like, oh, he's got a new one?
Always.
Let's go, boys, let's go.
Like get your
gear, like, and we're gonna hammer it out.
Absolutely. It's always, they're always excited to hear that I've got new stuff in the works. We're gonna be doing some pre-production stuff here in a couple of weeks, so that'll be the first time the guys get to hear most of the songs. And then we're planning on getting in the studio in the spring to record them. So
nice.
Do you pay attention to any, when it comes to writing or like lyrics, do you pay attention ever to the mainstream? It's gotten better. I will say that, like mainstream country, but in spots, but do you ever hear something and you're just like, how in the fuck is this song like as successful as it is? Or do you kind of just go, who cares, whatever? Or do you like, or are you just, does it ever like, I mean, internally, does it make you fume a little bit or not really?
I mean, I hear it and I acknowledge it, I think internally, but it's not something that I really spend a lot of time harping on.
Yeah.
we're kind of almost playing two different sports. You know what I mean? Mm. It's kind of apples and oranges at times. And I don't really spend a lot of time comparing myself to anyone.
It made me think of Cody Jinx had a post on social media. It was a year ago by Sam Hunt. He was like sitting in a dentist office and he's like, this Sam Hunt song just came out and he's sampling.
He was in the dentist. Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God. Like,
here we are. Like, we're back in.
How are you back? I don't know if you cut me. Sorry. I was just talking about a while back, Cody Jinx, when he was in a dentist office, he posted something on social media because Sam Hunt's song at that time came out where he sampled that
Webb Pierce song.
Yeah, Webb Pierce.
There Stands and, the Glass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, he just went off on this tirade because he's just like, and he usually doesn't really do that, like in that way. Like he'll do something on stage that kind of goes viral.
Sure.
But, and I just, we thought it was so funny that we like shared it and went viral for us too. And so I feel like a lot of you guys like, all right, just who cares? Well, who cares? But if you're forced to listen to something,
then it boils over.
It's one of those things. Like it's not something that I really surround myself with or listen to ever. So it's not something that I have time to put a whole lot of thought into.
But the Uber driver grabs you.
In situations where it's kind of forced upon you. Sometimes you get a little queasy listening to some of that shit and wondering how somebody made so much money off of that. Right. But I mean, like I said, man, it's not a competition. It's art. You know what I mean? And however you want to do it, you do it. I'm going to do it the way that I want to do it. I think if people will look at it like that, it makes the whole world a better place.
Well right. said.
When you guys go into the studio and you kind of bring the boys this new song, do you have like an audio kind of demo that you've worked up, or do you just kind of sing it acoustically? And
not usually. I usually just sing it for them right there on the spot. And then we start the process. Which with the guys we've got in the band, we've been together for so long and we've played so many shows and done this so many times that can almost read each other's minds. It doesn't take these guys long to get those songs tight. The types of songs that I write, they know the dynamic needs to go, where it needs to hit really hard, where it needs to get really loud. They're super pros. So it's usually a pretty smooth process to do it the way we do it.
Yeah, when you started, what was the worst song you ever wrote, or what was the worst song title or like concept you ever, like maybe it was like, I don't know how old you might have been, or do you look back even when you first started as a kid or however old you were and go, actually that wasn't that bad, because I've heard some stories of people being like, what the hell was I thinking with some of these?
Yeah, it's gone both ways. Some of them some songs I look back at that we've stopped playing and the boys are like, man, we should throw that back in the set now, how we've you know, grown and advanced as musicians, we should really get that back out. It was a cool tune. And then there's the opposite. There's some of them that I'll write, you know, even nowadays and be like, what the fuck was that? You know what I mean? Like I'll have an idea for a line of chorus. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Wait a minute. I got to tie this together somehow. I got to do something else. So yeah, I mean, it still happens.
That's funny.
Yeah. I imagine songwriting is sometimes kind of like when you get a group of people together and they start drinking and they're like, we should go on a trip. And everyone's like, yeah, let's do it. And then the next morning you're like, that was fucking stupid. I don't want to go to
that's a great analogy.
It can happen like that sometimes for sure.
And you're like, oh, I had this great idea. You flip back through the notes. You're like, that doesn't make sense. What the hell is this? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Voice memos. I don't know if you use those, but
sometimes I'll write a song and I'll listen back to it. Yeah. Do a voice memo thing or some kind of primitive recording and listen back to it and be like, that just doesn't sound like me, and not in the way that like, oh, your voice doesn't sound like your own voice, but that just doesn't resonate with me anymore like it did 12 hours ago when it was brand new and I had this idea, you know, six beers in with a guitar in my hand.
Oh, trust so me,
you've always got to kind of look at them and see how they're going to translate the morning after, I guess.
Yeah, Wes and I have had a lot of post-podcast drinking sessions where we come up with ideas for whatever content or like creative, whatever, shop, shirts, tweet, what? And we're like, duh. And then we would wake up the next day. We're like, well, yeah. I'll look in my, I use notes like where I would put the grocery list or whatever.
Yeah.
If I think of when I'm drinking or smoke weed, like think of a funny tweet, even something so simple as a funny tweet. Or like if I have a weird dream, I try to like get it down before you forget it.
Sure. That's and what I mean.
So many times though, I look back and I literally don't even understand what I'm trying to say. I'm like,
yeah.
Not even that I was that fucked up. It was just like, I was like, wait, there was something in my head clicking when I wrote this, but I don't know what the hell I was trying to get at.
I do that too. I've gotten, I had one scenario where I forgot the melody of a song for weeks. I couldn't remember. I had a brand new song that I'd worked on. I remember the progression. I could not remember how the melody was or where that downbeat was when the vocal started. And it just never felt or sounded right again until I just sort of accidentally lucked into playing it right when I was sitting around on the couch and I was like, there's the melody. There's the lost melody. So, yeah.
Wow. That's got to feel good. That's like the high school math problem you can't figure out and you get it. And you're just like, yeah, fucking.
For sure. That's exactly the feeling.
Have you ever written something and then you were like, fuck, that's like this melody of like a popular song,
oh, that's
or maybe
a
not a such a popular
that.
Song, or maybe that like,
yeah, for sure.
Completely, I mean, only accidental, but like
when you're somebody that's making a particular style of music, I mean, there's so much room in the world of music for interpretation and expansion, but at the same time, country music is still
only so many chords,
three chords in the truth. Right. And you know, that melody line is not going to fit not every melody that you're going to dream up is going to fit the vibe of the song. So there's only so many places you can really go with stuff. And yeah, there are times when I hear stuff and I think, oh, that kind of sounded like that. We have a song, there's about 4 seconds of it. And every time we play it live, I think it sounds like Hotel California. And it's just those 4 seconds. It's like a passing transition between like three different chords. And I'm like, oh shit, that's from that. But yeah, there's always times when you're hearing stuff and I think it's because, you know, it's partially because the music you listen to and love makes an impression on you, but it's partially because it's what comes intuitively within that chord progression or that tempo or whatever it is. It's what makes sense to everybody else when they wrote this similar song. So
yeah,
I think it's kind of that way.
And it's subconsciously like, I'll think of a tweet and I'm like, wait, this is pretty good. And I'm like, I gotta, so I on Twitter, before. You can like search it to make sure nobody else has tweeted it.
Yeah.
I'm like, did I see this in passing and it like stuck or did I think of this? And, you know, that happens so often. I mean, even for us, like in the shop and stuff, it's like, oh, this is a great idea for a new Yellowstone. Sure. We're like, wait a minute. This is all right. Like, is it, if you're creative, like ideas come, but you're also like more aware when you're not trying to be aware. That makes sense. I feel like, right. You're sensing what's happening without actually like trying to. So that's going to infiltrate kind of sometimes the thought.
I saw John Mayer once say that he wrote a song that everyone thought sounded like a U2 song. And he said if he would have realized it in the moment, he would have never released it. But since he didn't release it, he was like, I was comfortable. Since he didn't realize it, he was comfortable releasing it as like something that happened just kind of organically. But like, when he notices something that sounds similar, we lost him again.
Well, Wes just told me a John Mayer story. So.
Yeah, I told him a John Mayer
story. We're wrapping up here, so
I might as well be on a tour bus in the middle of the fucking desert is out here. And it's actually sticks on this Wi-Fi, man.
Wes told me a cool John Mayer story just now, but
I missed the whole cool John Mayer story.
No, he just thought. What was it, Wes? Real quick,
he basically said that he was recording a song. And he realized after the fact that it was sounded just like a U2 song, but he said, had he realized it in the moment, he would have scrapped the idea immediately, but because he didn't and it came out organically, he was like, fuck it. I'm still recording it. Still putting it on the album. Like,
sure.
And it sounds pretty similar to a U2 song, but like, you know,
oh, we don't got to get into it, but I was like, legally, I'm like, this seems like a nightmare.
I mean, people litigate that shit all the time. Like
if it's that close. Yeah. I mean, it can be a headache for sure. Especially if it's like, somebody that's got a whole lot of paper to push a lawsuit.
When you see those songs that have like 14 songwriters on there because they have to put both songs together one. And then all of a sudden your royalties go down the drain.
Just to finish out the year, you got some more tour dates just for the fans. I think you want to say, I know a lot of people kind of slow down this time of year. Just what can fans expect?
We're right into the end of our year. We're going to slow it down some in December. Early next year we'll be gearing up first of the year, man, to really, really get after it all over the country. A lot of big cool tour news coming for 23 too. So
love it.
Right on.
All right, Isaac, you guys are on a rocket ship and we're big fans. Obviously we'll keep supporting the music, of course. And can't wait to see you guys. And
one more
guys.
Time.
Oh, I said, we're obviously huge fans. You guys are on a rocket ship. And we're going to keep supporting the music and hopefully we can see you guys live here soon and have a drink with you guys and enjoy it.
I think the album might wind up pretty close to the top on our 2022 albums of the year list.
Yeah. We're going to be working on that the next 6 weeks or so here.
Killer. Glad to hear it. I appreciate the support, boys.
Yep. Anytime, man. Can't wait to see you guys live, man. Really excited about it.
Yep, for sure.